Carlos, is today the type of game that feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity with some of the sloppiness on the other end?
Yeah. Look, I feel like, you know, we were right there and you just couldn't put anything together. And obviously they got the big hit, you know. One of those games where you just got to turn the page and get ready for tomorrow, but yeah.
Pete, Carmen, even though the results haven't been there, he's thought your at-bats lately have been better. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like you're getting close even though the results haven't been there?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done a great job of commanding the strike zone. I feel like I'm swinging at quality pitches. I mean, I hit a couple balls hard today and yesterday, and I'm just going to keep doing so. I feel like I'm in a really good spot right now.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, July the 21st, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. I know. Here it is, Sunday night. You're pissed. I'm pissed. After a beautiful All-Star break, getting away a little bit from baseball, maybe you enjoyed the Home Run Derby, maybe you enjoyed the All-Star game. Those things aren't for me. I peek in, that's what I'll call it, peek in. But I took some time away from baseball. Of course, the newsletter kept cranking. We kept bringing out content, talking a little bit about Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil, two of our favorite topics at times this year. But a little bit of a break, and then we come back on Friday, and guess what? The Mets kind of look like they went away for a weekend, they get back to work on Monday, and they're not quite ready for work. What is it, a baseball version of the Mondays? But a lot to talk about. Pete Alonso again in our crosshairs. I know we spoke about him on the last program. Kodai Senga is a thing, finally. Is that a good thing? Christian Scott, a little bit more to go with Christian Scott. Have some thoughts on that. Edwin Diaz, is he back? Jeff McNeil, is he back? We'll see, but we'll have plenty to talk about in the back half of the show. We'll talk a little bit about Senga and a fun announcement. We have a big Talking Mets Substack newsletter announcement in terms of a fun project that one of the contributors, one of the guys that I rely on, put together. And I had a little bit of input in the sense where I was like, hey, this is what I was thinking. Here's what you're thinking. But it's really not my genesis. And it's a little bit of something different that we normally don't do. We'll announce that in the back half of the program. So here we are. So it's called Stub Your Toe Weekend. I wrote about it a little bit, the concept. And we have all these like goofy concepts here at the Talking Mets podcast, like the getting to know you phase and what do they need phase and the go get it phase. You know, we do all these kind of, you know, things, back of the paper bag math. I mean, there's probably some I'm not even thinking about. I've had people call me out on X with these crazy little things, but that's what makes watching baseball fun. That's what makes this show fun. We don't take ourselves too seriously. We're not looking for jobs in baseball here. We're just trying to have some fun, passionate fans looking to talk about the Mets with me trying to be that bridge. So when we do things like stub your toe losses or stub your toe series or stub your toe weekend, it just adds to the the lexicon? Is that the right word? Before the show is out, I gotta look it up because I'll just like throw a word out there that lexicon, the vocabulary of a person. There it is. The dictionary comes up and does it. I just, all truthfulness, I did not prepare for that word. Lexicon, the first million-dollar word maybe in the history of this show, but when you're at this point of the year, and now that the All-Star break is over, and I know we're still in that, what I like to call, hey, what does this team need phase, but you're in the back part of it. I mean, the trade deadline is less than 10 days away. So the Mets have got to figure out, hey, Are they going to be able to get some bullpen help? Do they want to add to their depth a little bit on the positional side? Can they do this without giving up a lot of prospect capital? Is this a team that they want to invest in deeply? Steve Cohen, of course, probably has some say in that. Did the OMG and the Grimace and all that fun June that just basically got the Mets back to par where you expected them to be a little bit over 500, is it clouding the whole big picture? Because the Mets, and I know the draft was last week and we haven't really talked about it, and I'll get to that later. I'll tell you why we don't really get too deep into that. But the Mets are starting to build some depth in that farm system. And they're starting to have a farm system that has desirable pieces. Now, whether those pieces contribute at the big league level, and if they contribute at the big league level, do they make contributions in a big-time, impactful way, like the Harveys and the DeGroms and the Syndergaards, Alonzo McNeil at one point, or are they component players, or are they pieces that go out and get you something else, like how Jay Bruce was acquired for Dilson Herrera at one point. So there's a lot of different ways that a farm system can go. So the Mets are going to have to think about that as they go into the next week and a half or so, as David Stearns tries to hold on, piece this bullpen together, stay competitive, tough part of the schedule coming up, while he tries to make some deals here. Now, you're going to stub your toe throughout a baseball season. You're going to have losses that you should have, not lost. Games you shouldn't have lost, like when you blow five-run leads. They've done that a couple of times the last couple of weeks. There's going to be series throughout the year that you lose that you shouldn't. But after the All-Star break, and especially as you get down the stretch, you have to minimize those kind of losses. Blown saves are killers. We've talked about this on the show before. And as you get later and later in the year, they're like a punch to the gut and a kick in the you-know-what. It's like a double whammy. They always hurt. They hurt in April. They hurt in March if you start the season early. But they doubly, triply, quadruply hurt as you start to get down into a pennant race. And now that we're past the All-Star break, now that the Mets have cleaned up the horrific baseball of May, the stakes are now raised. And truthfully, admit it, you're starting to watch the scoreboard. You peeked in on the Cardinals and Braves. Admit it, it's okay. You're starting to watch the Pirates and the Diamondbacks. Maybe you'll even keep an eye on the Nats and the Giants and the Cubs. And that's okay, because that's what's part of pennant race baseball. Whether it's competing for a division or competing for a wild card, or in this case, multiple wild card spots, jockeying for position and trying to be part of that. You want to get excited. You want to start scoreboard watching, something that you really don't do right now the way the league is set up. You don't do it till the earliest, the All-Star break. Maybe it's even too soon now. What I do know is this. The wild card is going to be a dogfight. I don't see Pittsburgh and Arizona necessarily going away. I mean, look, this weekend, the stub-your-toe weekend, I saw the Mets play down to their competition. I saw the Pirates beat the Phillies. I saw the Cardinals play the Braves tough. I see the Padres hanging around. Arizona's playing better. Nobody is going to give the Mets a break. Nobody is going to hang around 500 or below so that the race could come to the Mets. So this idea that the Mets are going to have an opportunity, and we know the law of averages will even itself out. They've been playing sometimes a close to 700 baseball, and they're not a 700 base. Many teams, there's very few teams in the history of the sport that are 680 to 700 winning percentage teams. They were just progressing to their mean. So we know they're going to regress a little bit, and they have to a certain degree since July, the calendar turned to July. But this is going to be a dogfight, and the Mets aren't in a position to recalibrate and find themselves. Now, in truth, we all know what usually happens, especially in this kind of muck, if it stays this way, that the team that gets hot the last 2 weeks of the season is probably going to be in a pretty good spot. We saw it actually in 2016 when the Mets were under 500 in August by a game or two, and they got hot the last 6 weeks. Terry Collins special. Terry Collins has made his career over two 8-week runs in the regular season, if you really want to be honest about his tenure. And they made the postseason. So we've seen that happen. But to get to the point where that's a relevant scenario, you got to continue to play good baseball. And you can't do what you saw this weekend. You can't. And I heard a little bit of As you heard it coming in, Mendoza talking about Alonso, and you'll hear it later about Senga and Senga talking about his disastrous rehab start down in Syracuse. You really can't spend a lot of time finding yourself. I mean, to a certain degree, Edwin Diaz is still trying to find himself. He looked pretty good. McNeil has been trying to find himself for a year and a half now. I don't know if Friday means he did, but it's a good start. You still have some key components on this team finding themselves. And that is a problem because they really don't have that luxury. One bad week and you could find yourself behind multiple teams, not in a playoff spot or tied for the last spot or half game to a game out of a spot. I mean, a couple of games out and jumping teams. And the Mets have some, and I think the booth said it best, that trip in August to Anaheim and Seattle and Colorado with a pit stop to make up a rainout in St. Louis, that's a death knell. So when you bank the wins now against teams like Miami, teams like Colorado, who they beat over the weekend, with 30 combined 60 games under 500, it will come back and pay you in dividends when you go out to the end of the earth in Seattle, and it ain't going to be that easy to win. So the Mets are in a position right now where they have some concerns, and we always, as Mets fans, always have that Murphy's Law dark cloud on our heads. But to me, Pete Alonso is a big concern. And I don't want to make it all about Pete because I just mentioned a couple other names, and I'll give you some observations from the weekend that, you know, these are things that have to fix themselves now, or they have to have decisions made to mitigate them. That's with Stearns and Mendoza now. Because we've spent a large part of this great run, the Grimace OMG run, lamenting about, oh, that bullpen drives me crazy. Even during wins, that bullpen drives me crazy. But there are other things to worry about. Now, Alonso set such a horrible theme all weekend, and he should have actually grounded into a second big double play. He got bailed out by a throwing error today. And then I know he almost got the hit, and the pitcher did a hockey goalie kick save and a beauty. I'm not so sure that was going to be a hit. I mean, it's debatable. That might have just went to the second baseman anyway, and he would have been out. But all right, you want to say that, fine. But Pete Alonso set the tone on Friday. Pitcher, and I know Cabrera has some talent. He's one of the Marlins pitching prospects. Pitcher with an ERA over 8. Can't throw a strike. In trouble. And you say to yourself, here you go. The second half is about to start off on a good note. And there he is. He grounds a double play. The Mets fall behind. Bad performance by Manaea. They try to come back. You know, doesn't happen. And you have your stub your toe loss. And then today you have another. You had a great win yesterday. Severino showing that he might still have some of that magic from 2018, 2017, 2019 left in his body. Puts in a ace performance by today's standards. And Diaz comes back and looks like Diaz. So they win 1-0. And then today you go out and you give it back with another bad performance. Now, we knew the offense was going to come back down to earth a little bit. I mean, they're hanging in there as an offense with teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies. I mean, they're scoring well over half a run a game more than the Braves, who I was looking at some stats. It's amazing how the Braves and their hitters have fallen off the cliff this year. Amazing. I mean, I don't know if that's the Acuna effect or there was something else. Maybe they just had career years last year. I don't know. But the Mets are a serious offensive team. Now, whether that can continue or they just got hot and guys like Vientos, and I know J.D. Martinez has cooled off a little bit, and Torrens and Iglesias, who doesn't seem to stop hitting. I mean, he's a line drive machine. I mean, it depends. I mean, are these things that are going to come back down to earth? We'll see. But the point is, you knew they were going to come back down to earth. They still are a team that the genesis and the foundation and the blueprint to success has been a quality start of 5 to 6 innings, a crooked number on the offensive side. Big hits usually are part of that crooked number. When you have an opportunity to score, you have to execute. Torrens did today with a sac fly. Alonso has not. And then you get good bullpen because you have that elite dominant closer, so you just got to get usually 6 to 9 outs out of the bullpen. That's what you like to get. And if you could get some help on the trade front, it makes those 6 to 9 outs a hell of a lot easier. Because right now, sometimes when you don't have Buto, when you don't have Nunez, and you're dealing with Diekman, and you're dealing with Maton, and you're dealing with Hauser, or, you know, anybody else, you got to hold your breath a little bit, even when you have a 5-6-7 run lead. We talked about this. I'm not going to get back into it. So Alonso's struggles, and I found this amazing because this was sent to me, and I don't know where they found it online, but somebody did a comp over the last 2 years of Pete Alonso versus, I would say, the best seasons of Lucas Duda's career, 2014 to 2015. And Duda, who had a really nice and was a big piece of that 2015 championship club. I know everybody remembers that throw to home plate in the World Series. He was never known for his defense, but, and think about it, at one point, Lucas Duda was asked to play the outfield. I mean, it's really, when you think about it, it's crazy when it's all said and done. But Pete Alonso's actually, what he's produced over the last couple of years is something that falls short of what Duda produced 2014 to 2015. And I'll tell you what, Duda was never considered an elite generational hitter, power hitter. He wasn't somebody that was looking for a generational contract who was represented by one of the, I don't think he was represented by Boris. I shouldn't make that statement. I'll have to check that, but I don't think he was a Boris client. But anyway, he wasn't somebody that was, you know, throwing themselves out there to be paid like Pete wants to be paid. And at this point, is it crazy? And I heard, you heard the quotes coming in, and I'm sure that Mendoza's going to support. Now, he was, by the way, Duda was represented by the Beverly Hills Sports Council. So no, he wasn't a Boris client. But is it unfair at this point? Because you're trying to win games. You're not here to have Pete find himself. To do something like the Cardinals did today with Paul Goldschmidt, who's been slumping now very similar to Pete for a while, and drop him in the lineup. Now, they dropped Goldschmidt to seventh. I recommend it over at Beyond the Mic, our Substack newsletter component to the show, to bat him sixth for a little bit, maybe jostle him a little bit, wake him up. And it's easy for me to say it behind a keyboard. It's easy for me to say it behind a mic because I don't have to face Pete in the locker room like Mendoza does. And I don't know the intricacies of dealing with Pete Alonso and his confidence and how to keep him being the best version of himself. That's why they pay Mendoza to do it. And he knows it. And if it's something that he thought would help, I think he would do it. I think he has the cojones to do it. But obviously, it's delicate. That's a delicate situation. But it's something that I think the team should consider. Because right now, Pete's coming up in big spots, and he's hitting the ball hard, as he said, and he's trying to find himself. But you're really not in a spot where, at this point in the season, that's something you have the luxury of doing. If Goldschmidt, a former MVP, can move down the lineup, so can Pete. And it hasn't been, it's been a long time. Goldschmidt hasn't hit this low in the lineup since 2012. It's well over a decade. This starting pitching isn't good enough to survive an offensive brownout. So when you get opportunities to score, they're not going to score 6.5 runs a game over a period like they did in June. They're not going to do that going forward. That's historic. I mean, there are teams that have that capabilities, and shoot, look, the Braves of last year are one. The vintage Yankees teams from post-2000, they had some massive offenses. I'm not sure these guys are it. Maybe they are. Maybe I'm misreading it, but I think there's some regression that's going to happen with certain guys. And the guys like Alonso and J.D. Martinez and Nimmo and Lindor and Alvarez, and we'll see about Vientos. He's part of that. We'll see if this could continue. They're going to be the ones that ultimately are going to have to produce when their number gets called and they are in a spot that calls for it. And Pete has not come up, and I'm not saying he's not been clutch in his career. We know he has been. I'm not saying he never gets a big hit. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I know there's some people that get really frustrated with any kind of Pete Alonso criticism. But right now, hitting fourth and being the guy that is asked to drive in and be that RBI guy like he was in 2022 when they won 101 games, it's not happening. And you look at this rotation, and I'll get to Kodai Senga after the break. You've got a kid now in Christian Scott that it's been called on, and he's pitched well, and today was one of those stinkers. I don't know, maybe pitching in his hometown, that's part of it. He got out of a big bases loaded jam, and I think a lot of that is because he got himself in trouble and had to work so hard to get out of it. When you get back in trouble again, it just takes a lot out of you. But when you look at this rotation with Senga, and assuming, and that's a big assumption. We'll talk about Senga again after the break. Assuming that Senga comes back, I still think, and I know there's been talk that he had some concerns, elbow concerns, injury concerns last year. And I understand they're going to want to limit his pitches and his innings. And sometimes coming out of the bullpen doesn't necessarily lend itself to less use or less wear and tear, because you got to get a call and the game dictates sometimes that scenario. And here you go. But Christian Scott is really good against right-handed batters. And he's not so good against lefties. And to me, it was very similarly, I think McGill had that problem throughout his career. He's had that problem. It smells right now, at least this year, with all the things together, that the bullpen would be something that would help him. And it would help the Mets. Just like Buddha, who's going in there and maybe putting himself in a Seth Lugo-type situation. Or do you flip-flop? Does Buddha get the starts and Scott go to the Buddha role? I mean, that's the problem. Again, we're trying to figure this stuff out. It's July. It's almost August 1st. This season's about, what, another 8-10 weeks to go? 10 weeks to go? You really can't do this. This is, and we knew some of this was going to be part of year one of the Stearns regime. So there's another problem. You gotta, you have a rotation that really right now has to be, it can't regress. You can't have the Manaea Scott outings because you can't ask the offense to continue to carry them with 6-7 runs a game. You know they still need bullpen help. The B team hung around. I mean, Hauser did a fairly good job, and Diekman surprisingly got some outs. We know they need some bullpen help. Diaz, look, I watched the Diaz because I wasn't available live yesterday, so I watched the Diaz ninth inning this morning on MLB TV, and I thought he was a lot better. I thought he was commanding his pitches, especially the lefties. Got a break with Chisholm with the ball that was probably a pitch that was probably would have been 3-1 instead of 2-2. But still, he made big pitches. His slider looked good. And I think that's going to be the key, because they're starting to load up with lefties because they see how successful lefties have been, how he struggled to throw strikes to lefties. That is something that might be in Diaz's favor, because historically he has not struggled against lefties. So maybe they're playing into his strength. They just don't know it yet because it hasn't been a strength this year. So this is big. I mean, the velocity seemed to be there. I saw more 98s, no 96s and 97s, so we saw that. And then look, if Jeff McNeil could join the party just a couple of days after I wrote about maybe... So Mike Francesa, I don't know if you guys realize it, if you want to read the piece, I wrote it over at the substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG newsletter. It was a free piece for all. It wasn't a paid piece. Francesa talked about on his podcast the Mets trading McNeil to the Yankees for, of course, a minor league pitcher. To do a pitcher. Just gift them away. And I threw some names, if they do want to do that, that I might be of interest to if I were the Mets. But just a couple of days after, I wonder if McNeil is done and a change of scenery is the best thing. Hits a couple of home runs on Friday. Now, he made an out today, but he didn't start. He came off the bench. So McNeil joining the party. And I know Iglesias has been really good. Iglesias has been everything that McNeil used to be. And I think it's going to be hard, but he is a veteran, and he is older, and you don't want those magic, I mean, I don't know if it's magic beans, maybe it is. You only have, if those magic beans only have so many hits in those at-bats, then yeah, you want to situate them correctly. So keep putting McNeil out there, and maybe, I don't want to say platoon them, they are going to platoon, I guarantee he's going to play against all lefties at Iglesias, but maybe have some kind of situation where against certain pitchers, even if they're lefty or righty, Iglesias or McNeil plays, depending on that. So, but to me right now, the challenge that the Mets have, that Stearns has, that Mendoza has, you still have a club that you're trying to figure stuff out, because things have changed and evolved so much. And there are guys, I mean, part of this great run has been contributions from three guys. Vientos, which is somewhat surprising. Iglesias, very surprising. And to a certain degree, Torrens, because he was a big part of a couple of wins while Alvarez was out that weren't supposed to be. And the guys like McNeil and Alonso that are supposed to be the stalwarts, they are not playing up to their capabilities. So you have to make deals. You have to decide if you want to invest in this club. The next week and a half, I think, is going to be a fascinating time to be a Mets fan because it's going to be all sorts of emotions. You're going to probably see a big deal. It's possible that the deal will be involve giving up a painful prospect. I heard, again, we heard Mason Miller's name out there with the Dodgers. I don't know how true that is. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if the Mets could take some of their prospect capital and get Brett Rooker and Mason Miller? I know that that was a fantasy probably. Those are two really good pieces that the A's have. And I'd be curious if that's something the Mets could do because it's going to require them ripping away. And it'll be funny that I bring that up because my announcement in the second part of the show will be centered around, maybe I'll give you a hint, prospects. So, you know, it'll be interesting. You'll probably have highs with some big games. I mean, the Braves, who are right in the Mets' crosshairs, they're coming to town. You have the Subway Series. They play in the Twins. They got another game against Miami tomorrow. So, you know, the best case scenario now is you stub your toe this weekend and you split, so you kind of mitigate the damage by winning tomorrow. And then you go to the Subway Series. It would be beautiful for the Mets to take two more games. The Yankees lost 2 out of 3 to the Rays this weekend, and they have a host of their own issues. Of course, the media using the whole Severino, they only have 2 hitters. I would say maybe 2.5. Ben Rice looks pretty good, but he's still an unknown quantity. It's not all, what Severino said is not untrue. If it wasn't for the Mets walking, the only reason the Yankees even scored the amount of runs they scored is because the Mets had such a bad bullpen and they walked too many hitters. Walks will make any bad offense look good. So you have that, you have trades, you have the highs and lows of the wild card, you have the emotions. I mean, look, is it inconceivable that Pete gets traded? I don't think that's going to happen. But there has been talk of the Mets contending and building going forward. And if the version you see right now of Pete Alonso is Lucas Duda, well, Vientos can do that. I mean, you need a third baseman. Is that Iglesias? And then you got McNeil. I mean, you're taking, you trade Pete, you better be right because you're still taking power out of the lineup. You're still taking production out of the lineup. And if you want to hear my thoughts about Pete and Pete going forward and who he is and free agency, just listen to the last show. I'm not going to get back into that. But right now, Diaz is probably on the pitching side a key to the Mets. On the offensive side, it really is Alonso. The Mets offense, if Alonso continues to have an OPS under 600, because he had a pretty good June, this team's going to struggle to score with him in the cleanup spot. They're going to have to think about dropping him. They really do. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the questions don't end. Kodai Senga's going to be back, possibly Friday. He's been making rehab starts. We've forgotten it. I mean, it's amazing. Senga was such a big topic of conversation last year. And I feel like since he went down in spring training, he's been totally forgotten about. I mean, how many times have we really talked about him, written about him? I mean, really, I almost forgot he was on the team. Well, he's going to be back. And I think he adds some complexities. And there could be a worst case scenario that comes with Senga's return. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with that and more right after this.